Nobody covers dog sledding like Mushing from First Paw Media. Our team of athletes, volunteers, race organizers, and mushers like Robert and Michelle Forto brings you closer to this sport. If it's happening, we are there. Live from the qualifying races in January and February, the Iditarod in March, and in the summer, Mushing takes you on the road with our team and trail tour. We connect you with a history of this sport, in-depth interviews with the top mushers, and great storytelling and breaking news all year long. Follow on Mushing.com.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert. I'm here with my co-host, Karosh, and we are the Dog Driver Show here on Mushing, and we are bringing back a returning guest. He was with us several years ago when we were doing this podcast. His name is Daniel Bocock. I know we've known each other for several years now. We've been at several events, including the One World Obstacle Course Challenge this past May down in Alabama. I'm excited to have you on again, Dan. How's it going today?
Oh, it's going well. Driving through the UP. At least the roads are clear, but it is awfully windy.
There you go. So let's jump over with Karosh. What do you have for us?
Dan, how you doing, buddy?
I am doing well.
Very good, very good. Been a while. We haven't talked. We text messages here and there. We talked, I think, 4 or 5 years ago last time when you were racing the circuit for ISDRA. And what's new since?
Well, still racing, but been focusing the last few years more on the IFSS races. Of course, went to Spain in 2023 with the six dog team. And then most recently, when the World Championships came to Wisconsin in Minocqua, raced our six and four dog team there as well. And that was a fun event. And then this year, for the first time, I started doing the canine obstacle courses, which was a little bit out of my box of what I normally do with dogs, but it was a good time.
Speaking of that obstacle course, Dan, your partner Anna Marmon, who we've had on the show as well, introduced me to that several years ago, and I took one of my Siberians down there. And I tell you what, that is one of the most unique experiences that I've ever done with a dog, a sled dog in particular. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about that? What is the setup and how did you do?
Well, I was thoroughly impressed with that obstacle course run and how it was ran. The amount of people there had to be like 800-900 people running that obstacle course with dogs. And I've never seen anything like it before. It was cool to jump into the water, having to work with your dog, crawling through tunnels underneath streets with water flowing through it, it was exciting. For our first time, I think we did fairly well. I can't remember exactly where we placed, but we were farther up the Georgia Urban Mushing group that I ran with. We were second overall for a team. So the team as a whole did extremely well. I think my dog was a little bit, didn't quite like the water at first because they weren't used to having to dive into pools of water and swim across. So it was exciting though.
Yeah, it is exciting for sure. And you mentioned 900 people there. I had Paul Hammond. He is the founder of that, I guess. He owns the resort there. That is a huge event, and I know to compare that with the World Championships, what we're going to talk about here in a second, who had 200 entrants. What an outing for a weekend at something like that event and then something like the IFSS. Dog sports are alive and well here in the country, aren't they?
Oh, yes.
For sure.
Okay, traffic lost.
Yes, they are.
Of course, we chatted about that the first time we had the interview with you. Tell me a little bit again about how you started in the sport so we know a little bit, the new people who are listening to you, they know a little bit more about you.
Well, I started about 15 years ago in the sport, started with just running canicross, and then did a little bit of rig classes, dabbled a little bit in some mid-distance races for a while. But then more or less about, I would say 7 years ago, 6 to 7 years ago, I really teamed up with Mike Marsh and started running his lines and his dogs, and then eventually had my own litter had basically our own six dog team, and we were performing extremely well. Myself, I was an avid triathlete, so I knew what it was to train my own self, and took some of that and what I learned from Mike and his training and plugged that into our team. And our team has been extremely successful, the six dog team, for the past, I would say, 5 years. We've gotten several ISDRA gold medals. We've gotten several IFSS Cup, World Cup point medals, gold. And then most recently this last year at the World Championship, we were second. We did have a couple issues, but we were second, so we still had a strong run. Anna Marmon and I, we've been together now for 2 years and engaged. So, and she has her own group of Siberians. So now at the house, we're up to 14 dogs. So we've got 14 or 7 Siberians and 7, I would say, Eurohounds.
Yeah, last time when I talked to you, you and Mike, you were exchanging dogs sometimes back and forth. Are you still doing that?
As of right now, I still have one dog that would be considered his. Eventually, I got another puppy, so we'll be, we still will probably exchange back and forth, and it depends on how long Mike, stays in the sport as well. So
that is good. The background behind those dogs, if I'm not mistaken, a lot of them are Graysters, correct?
Yeah, there are Graysters, and then Eurohounds was mixed into it. And our most recent, well, not most recent, but we had picked up, her name is Mila, and she came from Yaroslav, from the Czech Republic. So he was the one that won the six dog in Spain at the World Championships in 2023. So eventually the plan would be is to breed to her with one of my main boys on the six dog team.
Welcome to the Mushing Podcast. It's time for another memorable moment in mushing history. Sponsored by Peak Experience, providing experiential and team-building courses.
From March 1977's Iditarod, Al Perry, Tom Mercer, I, and Ralph Mann, in that order, after groping around in the dark to find our dog food, had pulled out of an old snow machine track and made camp. To say that we were discouraged, disgruntled, and dispirited would be an understatement. However, there wasn't a damn thing we could do but grin and bear it. I was sleeping in a GI mummy bag inside a 4-pound Eddie Bauer heavy-duty bag rated to 30 below, and it wasn't too warm. I had slept in that bag alone at 48 below and had been just as comfortable. Teams were coming in one after the other, and it wasn't too long before it looked like Valley Forge with teams and mushers grouped around little fires all through this little canyon. Night was on and still no word from the trail crew. Everyone was more or less rationing his dog food, not knowing how long we would have to wait for a trail to go on. A bunch of us gathered around a good-sized campfire and talked about, of all things, dogs. Everybody chipped in some one thing or another, and we made up a big stew. All of us were feeding meat of some kind or another to the dogs, and I am sure some of it found its way into the pot. There was no doubt about it. That was one of the best stews I ever ate. It got something warm into our bellies, and in conjunction with me, old loudmouth, someone was passing around, did much to revive our fallen spirits.
Dan, you were talking about Anna and her Siberians. Can you give us a compare and contrast between running the two different breeds, whether it's in training run or a race? What are the sames and the differences?
The biggest differences I've noticed with training is you can't necessarily train them the same as a hound. My guys will run on the same trail nonstop, They'll do loops, you know, and they just don't get bored. And it seems like with the Siberians, they want to see something new, and they want to, you know, experience different trails and not necessarily. I mean, we have been running them a lot on the trails here, but Anna's got an extensive program with how she trains up her dogs, and she, you know, like drags chains when she does like canicrossing. I never did any like weight work, but she does more of getting the you know, pulling weights, and she runs them off of a quad that we strip the motor off of. And then I, of course, run mine when I train during the fall off a quad that is powered. So I would say it's almost completely different training than what I do, but similar in that we're both training dogs.
Yeah, definitely. I used to have Siberians years and years ago, and they're definitely moodier than your typical sled dogs, Eurohounds, or even Alaskans. A lot of our listeners, Dan, are not mushers. We've used the terminology a couple of times in this conversation about Eurohounds or Graysters. Tell us what those are, please.
So the Eurohounds are what it would be European sled dogs. And it's a Eurohound when there's a mix of basically most of my lines, it's predominant pointers and then with Greyhound and with Alaskan. And when you get the Alaskan in there, that's when they become more of a we've considered them more of a Eurohound. The Graysters, from my understanding, and that would be what Mila is, does not have. I think she's got just in her report, maybe like a percent or two of Alaskan Husky. And then she's pretty much 90% German short hair pointer, and then the rest Greyhound. So it'll be a nice cross, because some of the dogs that I have about 30% Alaskan Husky in them. And that came from the Cheswick lines, I believe.
The female you were talking about, Graister, and you talked about some of the lines that you have. Where are they coming from originally, the background behind them?
Well, the main background is John Perry, who was out, and Mike Marsh would know more about that. But it was John Perry, and then Mike's crosses within his own breedings for the last, God, he's been doing it for 30 plus years. But these guys have really come out in, I would say, in the last 15 years of that. And then it was mixed with a dog that's back line was Cheswick lines. So I had a dog that was basically, yeah, I would call it Mike Marsh lines, and then bred to a dog that had the Cheswick background
on that. In your yard, do you have mainly males or females, Dan?
I have in my group three females, two are spayed, and then four males, all intact.
Very good. And I've seen in the new videos that you have snow by you right now, correct?
We did until yesterday.
Oh, it rained?
Got up to 52 degrees and rained. So, I was really bummed, because I had probably 15 to 20 hours into that trail and getting it packed down, because it kept blowing in, and we had 3 days in a row of awesome running, and then it went away.
So, bummer. You talked about international races, and specifically going to race with your team in Spain. Tell us about international travel with your dogs, because a lot of people, they have not done that in a bigger scale. You know, taking one dog is one thing, but when you're talking a team of six or eight or whatever, tell us about the challenges and logistics a little bit.
Well, you have to have – the biggest challenge was, of course, the airlines generally only allow you to have two dogs registered to one person. So that I ended up having to – I had my grandpa and Mike Marsh join me so that I could put two dogs under each of our names. So it gets to be rather expensive because in order to get a six-dog team over there, you got to have two other people. And generally, people aren't going to pay their way just for you to go run your ducks. So I would say the monetary, the funding of it is quite expensive. Getting rigs over there or bringing them back is what basically you either need to borrow or have somebody buy one over there, and then you could bring it back or resell it. Because the getting stuff like that on the plane for rigs anyway is a challenge. Sled's not as bad because like a Daimler can collapse and they got ski bags and it can, you know, go right into check luggage. So that is not as bad. And same with bikes and scooters. I mean, people travel with them all the time. But to have the rig class was quite difficult. The paperwork and going through customs. When we were flying back from Spain, it took forever for us to get through customs. Mike and I, and my grandpa was not the fastest walker at that time. And we were at customs checking in the dogs. And there was 45 minutes to the flight, and we got there 5 hours early, and it took us that long just to get to the customs. And when we left, after we got the dogs checked in, it said 45 minutes to the flight, and it said that it would take us an hour and 15 minutes from where we were in the airport to get to where the flight was. So they ended up holding the plane for us. They were calling us. I was scrambling through there like in Home Alone when she finds out Kevin's not with them. And because they said our dogs were on the plane, but you guys aren't. And I'm like, oh, my God, the dogs are going to land in Chicago without us. And so I ran, booked it because then got up there and they're like, well, where's the rest of your party? I said, they're coming. I said, they're only right behind me, but I knew they'd be like 20 minutes behind me. And they held the entire plane. And it was the walk of shame when we walked onto that plane because everybody was sitting there and they had delayed the flight for us to take off.
So speaking of that, Dan, that trip over to Spain, for folks that are listening, just put this into perspective. You guys did all of that and all of that expense, all of those logistics for what, 10, 12, 14 minutes for a couple of days running. Is that right?
Pretty much.
Man.
And then they have an issue on date. We had an excellent day one and had day two where my leaders, it was the father and son, and the father didn't quite always like running next to his son and decided to run him off the side of the course and got the whole team tangled. And we were only probably about a quarter mile out of the start chute when it happened. And then I watched every team go by as I was tangled up in a big ball because, as you know, on a rig, until you get to a tree, you really can't just step off and take care of the dogs. Not like a snow and you can put a snow or on a sled when you can put a snow hook down and at least take, you know, generally if it doesn't pop the snow hook, you can get your dogs back in order.
So that was the international championship, world championships there in Spain. What was that, 3 or 4 years ago?
Yeah, 2023. So just over 2 years ago right now.
Okay, so let's switch gears. I know Karosh has a few questions about the World Championships in Wisconsin, and that's literally in your guys' backyard, not too far from home. What do you have for him, Karosh?
Mainly the difference between the championship in Spain and the one in Minocqua.
Well, I would say the biggest difference was the challenge of getting any large teams over from other countries. So like when I was in Spain, there was at least 13 countries, I believe, represented in Six Dog. And then there was probably, I'm not quoting, but there was more in Four Dog. And so we had to, what ended up happening with Six Dog is we ended up borrowing people that came from other countries ended up borrowing dogs to help make the class run. So it ended up being more of for Six Dog, even though we did have the minimum for the three countries, all the dogs were from the United States. So the challenge is trying to get those bigger teams over here. You know, in the one in the scooter class and the bike class, it was very similar in terms of competition because there was quite, I mean, I think we ended up with 27 countries and there was like 351 entries. So it was still a very large race. But it just wasn't It was well run, but it wasn't quite the same as being over in Europe, because of course all the European countries you can drive to. So, you know, we're trying to, you know, the only countries that are, you know, you got Mexico and Canada. And so I think in the future to try to get it, because it would be awesome. And I know everybody's, there's a big push to get it back into the United States, but it would be awesome to try to raise some sort of funding or get it so that we can bring those teams over here as well. Otherwise, we're flying back over there, which I would like to do, to race again against, you know, the fast, you know, the elite of the dog sleds, you know, the mushers over in Europe.
Yeah, you are one of the very few people, I believe, that I know of with a bigger team to be traveling to the, what I call the big show. You know, you go there and the bigger, faster, stronger teams are all around you, and you've seen both sides. And that was very interesting what you just said about the competition and the number of the elite teams that you're going to be racing. We all talk about serious stuff, but let's talk about something fun. Tell me if you ever had any fun stories or anything crazy happening to you during training or racing throughout these years.
Lots. last winter when Anna and I, we met up with some folks for a training run in Baldwin. We're in Michigan, where Baldwin, where they host a race, and it's a beautiful trail. And if I remember right, Destiny Keel and Ted Gerke and I can't remember who else, but they took off with their four dog teams prior to me taking off the trail. So this was just us out there having fun. So I got on the sled and we got out on the sixth dog team, and I caught up to the first team that got out and we passed. And then I caught up to the second team, we got out, then we passed. And then I caught up to Ted, and after I passed Ted, my leaders were like, all right, this is just too much, you know, and they somehow got fumbled around. And so I had to put the snow hook down. Ted went by me but stopped because the dogs were just charging. You know, they were charging that snow hook. So as you know, you walk up the opposite side of the sled with, you know, of the snow hook, because you don't want that cutting your leg off if it does pop and you get drugged by the snow hook. And I get them all situated, and I'm walking, holding onto the gang line as I'm walking back to the sled. And Ted took off because he thought I was already back on the sled, and I wasn't. And then the dogs popped the snow hook, and I was right at the front of the sled bag holding onto the game line. So luckily I was holding on to it. Well, then I, as they popped it, it was a big downhill, probably for about a quarter mile. And I was snow plowing with my boots on, trying to get these guys to stop, because they could see Ted the whole time. And they're just, they're sight hounds. They want to, you know, they want to freaking, you know, catch that team. So I ended up getting to the point where I wrapped the gang line around my arm because I physically couldn't hold on to it anymore. I wasn't hurting. You know, it wasn't like I was getting hurt because the snow was soft. It was nice. But I got drugged for a good mile and a half until they finally were like, all right, Dad, we'll let you get back on the sled. So, but yeah, there's always experiences where things can go wrong. The biggest thing we always do is we try to put, you know, I always say never let go. You know, the last thing you want to do is let that team just take off. It happens, but that's when the dogs can get hurt, and the dogs come first.
Yeah, they do. And I think every musher that is listening to this right now is probably nodding their head at a story like that. We've all been there, done that for sure. It can be quite a harrowing experience, especially if it's for a mile. My goodness. How did you finally get him to stop? Did you end up running into your buddy there?
Well, I ended up having a fellow musher come up behind me, and they were trying to get my snow hook to stop them. And I can't remember exactly because it was quite a while ago, and everything's going through your head when that's going on. But right. Somehow my snow hook got caught on a tree or something. And so then I was able to put it back down and get situated, get back on the sled and finish the training run.
Catch your bearings for sure. Yeah. Dan, we have a couple of questions for you. We've been asking all of our guests. I'm excited to hear what you have to say. Are you ready?
Yep.
All right. So the first one is, what is your favorite song and or musical artist?
My favorite song and or musical artist. That is a tough one because I absolutely love music. And there's a lot of folks out there that that are really good right now. So I don't even know if I could put a song to it. But I generally listen to I like a lot of country, and of course any of the newer, you know, I don't know if it's R&B or what you want to call it, but the new age music. But no, I'm sorry, I can't come up one of the, off the top of my head of who would be my favorite artist as of now. So
all right, well, let me ask you this then. Based on the music, if somebody was rolling through Michigan and it was a concert that you just had to see, who would that be?
Well, I don't know. We went to the Detroit Lions game and we got to see Eminem at the halftime show.
Oh yeah, I saw that on TV. It was Eminem and who was with them? Oh, Jack White, right?
Yeah, two Detroit natives, and it was cool. Like, I've always wanted to see Eminem. And at the last minute, Anna and I was like, hey, let's buy some tickets. I think we were like row 20 in the end zone. Of course, I'm a Packers fan and Anna's a Lions fan, and I'm walking around in Packer gear, and I sit down and the guy next to me, he's like, oh, one of those. And I'm like, oh boy, this is gonna be a long game. But yeah, when that halftime show came on and Eminem came out, that was awesome. Yeah. I was always a huge Eminem fan.
I remember seeing the pictures from that at the Thanksgiving game for sure. Okay, next two questions here. One piece of gear that you always have with you other than your phone.
One piece of gear that I always have with me other than my phone. Do you want, like, dog mushing gear?
Any gear. It could be something you have in your truck. It could be something you have in your pocket. Dog gear, whatever.
Well, you'll always find a computer and you'll always find tools in my truck. So I never leave without my computer or tools for me to fix it. And of course, there's going to be a dog leash somewhere in there. There's always a dog leash or a neckline sitting around in my truck.
It sounds like a guy that's always ready. Next one up, I know you guys do some traveling to races, as we talked about, down there to Alabama and around. If you were to stop at one of those truck stops and got a favorite snack, what would that be?
Well, when I was in Wisconsin, if there was the Quick Trip was the big gas stations that were everywhere, and I absolutely loved them, and I always would grab one of their egg rolls. And I don't know why, but I loved their egg rolls.
Quick Trip egg roll. You know what they say about gas station sushi? I guess egg roll is a little bit better, right?
Yeah.
For sure. Dan, where are you most active on social?
Where am I most active? Probably Facebook.
Okay. We'll definitely link over to those in the show notes. Karosh, anything before we go?
No. Good luck with your season, buddy. And hopefully you're going to have a successful racing season ahead of you and good conditions. And hope to see you in Alaska one of these days.
Yes. Yeah. I'd love to get up to Alaska and race the circuit one winter. So.
All right, guys. On behalf of our guests today, this is Robert and KP for the Dog Driver Show. We will see you guys next time. Goodbye.
Are you a fan of the great outdoors? Do you enjoy the thrill of speed and adventure? Then listen up. Introducing Mushing, your ultimate guide to the exciting world of dog-powered sports and mushing. Whether you're a seasoned musher or just starting out, Mushing has got you covered. Get ready to immerse yourself in captivating stories of incredible sled dog races, expert training tips from seasoned professionals, and gear reviews to help you make the right choices for your team. From the breathtaking landscapes of Alaska to the snowy trails of Scandinavia, Mushing takes you on a thrilling journey through the world of dog-powered sports. Don't miss out on the latest issue, packed with exclusive interviews with top mushers, in-depth articles on sled dog nutrition, and stunning photography that will transport you to the heart of the action. So whether you're dreaming of competing in the Iditarod or simply want to learn more about this incredible sport, Mushing is your go-to resource. subscribe now and get ready to unleash your passion for mushing. Visit our website at mushing.com or find us on your favorite podcast platform. Mushing, where the spirit of adventure meets the power of the pack.